Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyflip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiasts and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Very cool. Here we are. It is Thursday, April 21st, I think, according to my calendar, 7 p.m., 7:05.
Access and you're late.
I don't have what?
I said You don't have your taxes in, you're late.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Severely late. I have the envelope right here. It's ready to be mailed.
your extension form, whatever.
Yes. If the IRS happens to be listening, my name is Jim something, so don't worry about it.
Jim something.
Yes, it'll be there when. So here we are. Welcome to the show. Yeah, it was last week, wasn't it? No. This
yeah,
week was
yeah.
18th.
You were under the weather last week. You recovered.
It was,
and you're back with us.
Yeah. And taxes were this week, so that was a good thing. Gave us an extra couple of days, but yeah, it was good. Very cool. And tonight we have a special topic that affects pretty much everybody interested in wine or deals with wine, drinks wine. It's a widespread
grows
topic.
Yeah.
Grows grapes. Yeah. Yeah. It's affecting. So definitely tune in, and you should be. Otherwise, you wouldn't be hearing this little intro. So there you go.
Right.
And if you want to get on the program, you can call the guest line. It's open right now. It is area code 646-727-3235. Lines are open. Operators are standing by. And if you call now, you get a free gift. I'm going to answer it and say hello. There you go.
Personally, we'll bypass the operators, yes. And Mike will answer it himself tonight.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I will say hello, and you're on the
You're on the
call. That's right. And here's Ron.
It's always good to have Mike back. He was in here last week, and so I didn't have anyone to look up a few things that I was talking about and all that. I said, well, you know, if Mike were here, he would have looked that up for me. So.
That's true. Yep. I usually mute the microphone so you don't hear the I usually, when you start talking, I mute the microphone so you don't hear me ticking away. And then when I find something, I unmute it. So it's like, I don't know if you hear that. I have some information.
Yes. Yeah. Well, anytime you find information tonight, then pop in there because we got a subject tonight that we're going to be talking about. I've been telling people, you know, the sad thing is, and I mentioned it to you, Mike, before the program, but the sad thing is I could not get a hold of anyone from Texas A&M. And those were the people that I found that, you know, I said something about them having a vaccine, an immunization of some sort, a way to control Pierce disease. And you looked it up and you told me, yes, it's Texas A&M. I called them and had no luck. In fact, one of the numbers, I was using my big super book here that I got, and I called one of the numbers on there, and it had been disconnected. I'm going, huh, what? This is a brand new issue and all that. And the number was disconnected.
To the university?
Yeah. It was a university number, and it was disconnected.
Oh, that hurts.
So I called another one, and they said, oh, we'll connect you. And they connect me, and it was an answering machine. And I left a message, and I said, please call me. I want to talk to you about it. And they never called. So I called them yesterday, too. So it wasn't like I called them today and just, you know.
They're not on break or anything. They're not doing the breaks, are they, at this time?
I think that should be over by now. Well, maybe, you know, I don't know. April is usually the big spring break month. I don't know. I don't know. But I never got a response. Hmm. So that's the sad thing about it. But otherwise, we are talking about glassy-winged sharpshooter and Pierce disease tonight. So if you have anything to weigh in on this, just call us, 646-727-3235. Mike will talk to you, let us know that you're ready to come on the show. Please keep it about the subject tonight, and we'll get you on the show and answer your questions or discuss it with you if you would like to. So, first, let's start out with the glassy-winged sharpshooter. Now, the glassy-winged sharpshooter, interesting little bug. It is, I can give you the formal name of it, but I would probably destroy the name if I pronounce it. what is the scientific name? I won't even attempt to do that. But it's part of the leafhopper family. It's the insect from the leafhopper family, which is the cicada family. Actually, the major family is cicada family. It's about 12 millimeters long, which is about a half inch. It's usually dark brown. I had a glassy-winged sharpshooter in a little jar. I got it from our sister winery in South Florida. I don't know where it is. I know I have it around somewhere, but I don't know where it is now. But it's about a half inch long, dark brown to black. The one I got is dark brown. On the belly, though, it's sort of a yellow, black and yellow coloring on it. It has yellow eyes, and the head is sort of speckled with little dots on it. The wings are transparent. It's like a cicada wings, a locust, what we call them, you know, when growing up we used to call them locusts, but cicada wings type thing. And they have a piercing, sucking mouth parts. That is the bad thing. Also, they have, what they refer to it as a roll of fine spines on their hind legs, but it's like little bumps on their hind legs. And that's important. We'll discuss that in a minute, why that's important. It is native to North America, actually northeastern Mexico is where it originally was. And it has spread into the United States and has became a major agricultural pest. The glassy-winged sharpshooter, I was just looking at a map. Let's see if I can find this map quickly again here. Oops, nope, not that one. And not that one. Oh, geez, what happened to it? There it is. Okay. This map shows that almost all of California is affected now. It has been affected, has had sightings of the glass-winged sharpshooter, all of Florida, which has been for years, a big chunk of Texas, all of Louisiana, and southern states. It goes up the East Coast quite a ways, too, up to almost into Virginia and almost into Maryland, that area there. And up the West Coast of the United States, all the way up into Washington. So it's got a big range. It's expanded a lot since it first came over from Mexico. So this is actually not a good thing. It is egg mass, and this is what they've been finding in Sonoma and Napa lately, the egg mass. They leave the egg mass on the underside of leaves, and then they cover that egg mass with a powdery white secretion kept in a sort of a dry form. That, there's a name for that, too. It's called brocosomes, B-R-O-C-H-O-S-O-M-E-S, brocosomes. Let me see what it has to say about brocosomes. Not much. It's just tells how it's done. So I'm not going to go into that because that obviously is not that important on our subject tonight. Dry secretion from brocosome, which is on their wings. Once the nymphs hatch and move on, the egg mass leaves a brown mark on the leaf's surface. And that's just how one of the ways that they can detect it. They don't have to catch the eggs themselves, so they can just see the brown mark on the leaf surface. The nymphs feed within the vascular system of the small stems on the plant, wherever the eggs are deposited. Then the nymphs molt and slowly become adults, glass-winged sharpshooter. Now, that's something I was told that they went through a four-cycle stage. That I didn't know that they molted each cycle. I understood that was like a flea where they went through four cycles. But I've read that in here, along with some other stuff, that they do molt. It feeds on a variety of plants, too. It's not just grapevines, although grapevines, this is all about wine, but we do stray a little bit, as we've proven over the years. It's been estimated that the sharpshooter feeds on over 70 different species of plants. Yeah, oh wow. Grapes, citrus trees, almonds, stone fruit, oleanders, a bunch of them. Because of their large number of hosts, the glass-winged sharpshooter population has been exploding in this country, and that's why. Now, I have heard somewhere, and I was told somewhere, and I try to confirm it, that the glass-winged sharpshooter is specialized. There's the ones that attack the grapevines. There's ones that attack the oleanders. There's ones that attack almond trees, citrus trees, stone fruit trees, stuff like that. I didn't see anything on the stuff that I was reading that they do specialize, but I've been told by more than one person that they do. So I tend to think, and the people that have told me are well-versed and major educated in the glass-winged sharpshooter and Pierce disease. So I would tend to think that they are specialized. They feed on the plants by inserting their mouth parts into the plant's xylem. And while feeding, the sharpshooters squirt small droplets of waste from their anus. It's a filtered xylem fluid and water traces, and it basically carbohydrates that are expelled. This is called leafhopper rain or sharpshooter rain. I've heard it referred to as both leafhopper rain or sharpshooter rain. Messy little droplets, and when the water evaporates, and this is the sad thing about it, why it's hard to get rid of them, when the water evaporates from their droppings, it leaves a residue that gives the plants and fruits a little whitewashed appearance that still contains Pierce disease. Their feeding methods are really unbelievable amount of food they eat. They're affecting vector for and I always pronounce this first name wrong. Xylella, X-Y-L-E-L-L-A, Xylella fastidiosa. X-fastidiosa is where it's usually abbreviated, and that's what I'm going to say because I have a hard time pronouncing the first name. Once they feed on an infective plant, X-fastidiosa colonizes the sharpshooter by forming a biofilm on its mouth parts. So Pierce disease, or Xylella fastidiosa, actually uses the sharpshooter to live on its mouth parts. Then the sharpshooter transmits this to other plants while it's feeding on those. And the plant that is not affected by any of the diseases caused by fastidiosa becomes a reservoir. Actually, they become a host, and what they do is they hold the bacterium for other sharpshooters to pick up and carry to other plants. So, X. fastidiosa is linked to many plant diseases, including phony peach disease in the southern United States, oleander leaf scorch, and Pierce disease, and also citrus X disease in Brazil. Again, we're concerned about grapevines, but you can have a glass-winged sharpshooter that lands on a grapevine, another one that comes by, feeds off of that, and goes on and starts feeding off of an Orlando plant or a citrus plant, and it's going to pass on the X-fastidiosa to that plant also. So it's a hard thing to control because of the way it spreads and stuff. Now, you can't really spray because if you spray the glass-winged sharpshooter, or GWSS, whenever you start talking about in the trade and stuff like that, whenever we start talking about, usually it's shortened to GWSS. GWSS usually is a problem everywhere because it will survive and pass around to just about anything. So, and especially because of the area and warming. I mean, I mentioned this before, but the actual warming of the planet is going to cause it to move further north, too. It's not really, if you look, it's mostly warm states and warm areas. But integrated pest management has been used to try to control this. They've used insecticides, parasitoids or wasp that will feed on it. Also, there's natural occurring pathogens, viruses, bacteria, and fungi, and these all are things that help control it, but it hasn't shown any increase in leafhopper mortality because of some of this. They got leafhopper infecting virus, HOCV-1, which is the abbreviation. I'm not going to try to pronounce the Latin name. Latin name, that's what I was trying to think of. Latin name on it. It is spread around in a highly concentrated areas, so you start getting leafhoppers that are the GWSS that's in an area, and they start expanding, laying their egg masses and stuff, and it could run rampant in no time at all. And again, we're talking about grapevines, but it also affects a lot of decorative plants. There are cities in California that have spent lots of money trying to maintain decorative plants that the GWSS has gotten into and passed on Pierce disease, form of Pierce disease. So, the glassy winged sharpshooter, GWSS, is the vector for our our Pierce disease that we get. It is, again, just a little small plant and our, a little small animal, and it's one of the invasive species. We can actually call it an invasive species because it was is not native to America. It was native to northern Mexico, which, you know, is so close. You can almost say, how do you know it wasn't across the border? But still, though. And now, it's Pierce disease. Pierce disease itself. Let's see. There, lots of stuff about Pierce disease. There's a lot of different things about it and a lot of stuff talking about it. Because it affects so many plants and everything, it's a bacterium, actually, is what it is. And it's the Latin names for these are just way out of my way out of my range here. The genus is Xylella, which is the first name, and then Fastidiosa. It is Orlando leaf scorch, Pierce disease in grapevines, citrus variegated chlorosis disease in Brazil. And in Europe, it has attacked olive trees. In fact, Mike and I were just talking about that before the show. In Italy, there's a big thing about southern Italy, about the olive quick decline syndrome because of Pierce disease, fastidiosa. It's a major, major problem. But Pierce disease and grapevines. It was discovered originally back in 1892 by Newton B. Pierce. Yay! So, hence the name. He was alive from 1856 to 1916. He was California's first professional plant pathologist in California. He found Pierce disease on grapes in California near Anaheim, where at the time it was known as Anaheim disease. And I've actually heard some old professors and stuff like that call it Anaheim disease or refer to it as Anaheim, which I can see no reason why now because we're 100 years later and they weren't alive when they were calling it that. So, but, oh well. The disease is endemic in Northern California, being spread by the blue-green sharpshooter. Now, which this only attacks grapevines that are adjacent to riparian habitat. It became a real threat to California's wine industry when the glass wing sharpener GWSS, native to the southeast United States, was discovered. Now, see, we just said that it's not from the United States. Now they're saying that this is native to the United States. So this is confusing things about it. Now, whenever I see something, I try to follow up and find something else. And there's nothing else. I mean, it's just this different thing. So very confusing stuff. That's why I wanted to talk to someone. I tried also to call Dennis Gray. Dennis Gray is a friend of the winery, actually. He was a genealogist. Thank you. What did you say? Genealogist. Well, he's an enologist, genealogist, has himself a doctorate degree and all that stuff. Probably one of the leading authorities in the United States on Pierce disease, on Xylella fastidiosa. I've had times to sit down and talk with him. Fascinating, fascinating man. Very knowledgeable. He visits at the winery at times and stuff. And he, a lot of the things that he's told me about Pierce disease, I tend to agree and understand, I should say, him, and put more faith in what he says and a lot of this other stuff I find different places. I try to get a hold of him, and he is not available. He's out of the state right now. He's in California working the egg masses and stuff. He's out in California working with a group of scientists out there. So he wasn't available this month at all. But Dr. Dennis Gray is my source, actually, if you will, on Pierce disease and glasswing sharpshooter. But the California wine industry, the GWS says, native to Southeast United States, was discovered in Temecula in California in 1996. They spread disease more extensively than other vectors do. And it's an immense threat. There's no cure has been found, but it's understanding of the Pierce disease and glass-winged sharpshooter has increased tremendously since around 2000. Some major studies have gone into it. Different universities such as California UC Davis, California Berkeley, California Riverside, University of Houston downtown, University of Florida, all these have done research and are trying to find information on the disease and ways to combat it. One way that they found is making plants that are resistant to it. The muscadine family of grapes, the Vitis rutinifolia, is immune to it. It's a native grape in the United States, and it's built up an immunity to it over the years. And so that's, they've done some cross breeding and cross research, genetic research, trying to find ways to make the Vitis vinifera plant, which is the one that we're used to drinking, the grapes that we're used to drinking, making that resistant to Pierce disease. There is an annual meeting in San Diego in mid-December every year for reports and information, all that. So if you're in that area or if you plan on being in that area in the middle of December in the year, it would be an interesting meeting to attend. No resistant Vitis vinifera varieties are available, and Chardonnay and Pinot Noir are especially sensitive. The muscadine grapes have a natural resistance. That's the Vitis rutinifolia I was just mentioning. Muscadines aren't affected, and so the ones here in the muscadine grapes here in Florida and up the east coast of the United States are safe. They've built up this immunity, but it doesn't do any good for the others. That's why they're trying to do crossbreeding. There's also some possibility of work being done in Costa Rica and Venezuela, trying to isolate hot spots of the disease and stuff like that down there, and trying to work with it to try to find ways to control it. Work right now is underway in UC Davis to breed a PD-resistant form of Vitis rutinifolia into the Vitis vinifera, which is the crossbreeding I've just mentioned. It's been going on for a long time. The first generation was like 50% high quality vinifera genes. The next was 75. The third was 87. The fourth was 94%. And in the spring of 2007, seedlings that were 94% vinifera were planted. I have no update on how that was. Now, I mean, but we're looking 9 years ago here, so I don't know if it's progressed further than that or what. And I tried to follow up on this too, and there's no further information on that, which is really, I mean, you know, the internet, you expect that to be nice, but you put something out there and it's there forever, and there's like a zillion million things on the internet, and it's hard to just go out and find the one thing you want, because when you punch in something, it gives you a trillion different things to look at. When a vine becomes infected, the bacterium causes a gel to form in the xylem tissue of the vine. What this does is it prevents water from being drawn through the vine. So it's like a plug, if you will, in the vine, this gel. The water won't go up through the vine. Leaves on the vine with Pierce disease will then turn yellow and brown and eventually drop off. I had, when we opened back in 2001, we planted Chardonnay, Cabernet, Merlot, and I was thinking four, maybe it was just three. Okay, just those three, Cab, Merlot, Chardonnay. Just, you know, like six, seven plants of each along the fences and stuff, so the plants could grow up on the fences, and they would just grow there for no other purpose than just let people see them. And they lasted about 2 years, and then the leaves started to fall off. Pierce disease is in GWSS, and it will come and feed on your vines eventually. And I didn't know what it was at first. This was back when I first started, when the winery was first starting, and I didn't know what it was. And I had Dennis Gray tell me, oh, they're dying from Pierce disease. That is the, you know, classic example. So the leaves drop off the shoots, then dying after, you know, anywhere from 1 to 5 years. Actually, it only took a couple years after they were infected. The vines will die, and that will be it. The proximity of vineyards to citrus orchards compounds the threat, because citrus is not only a host for the sharpshooter eggs, but also a proper overwintering site for the insect. And same thing with oleander. The common landscaping plant in California serves as a reservoir for the Axillea festidocia. So, you know, you can't escape it. You can't spray everything. You can't look at everything. So it is a it is an issue there. They have been doing genome sequencing of X fastidiosa for quite a few years now. And they should have came up with something that they can work with. And because of that, that's why I think it was based on the Texas A&M having a vaccination. But I haven't been able to find anything on it, no matter what I punch in on that. So, information on Pierce disease. Now, I've got some other stuff that was rather interesting about it. The disease is the single greatest limiting factor for commercial grape production in the warm growing regions, Florida, Texas, all that area there. It's destroyed thousands of acres of grapes, and actually now threatens the California grape industry. It is being addressed on multiple levels by extension centers in Texas and stuff like that. I just realized I don't have a wine tonight. I usually have a wine with the meal, or with meal, with the show, and I don't have one tonight. So it's something that has been ongoing. There's Texas A&M has been doing some serious search on it and serious studies on it, and trying to manage it in Texas has been an ongoing thing. My engineer just brought me a glass of wine. Let me see what this. It's white. Always on the second sip, never on the first. Tastes like my plantation white. Am I right? Yeah. All right.
Wow.
I just bottled this. When was this? Monday? Yeah, Monday. I just bottled this. So, yeah. Good, clean, crisp. People walk in the door and they say, do you have a Chardonnay? And I say, yes. Do you have a Pinot Grigio? I go, try this. I pour in the plantation white. They say, oh, just like a Pinot Grigio. They say, do you have a Sauvignon Blanc? I pour in the plantation white. And they go, oh, just like a Sauvignon Blanc. They come in and say, do you have a Chenin Blanc? I pour in this plantation white. They go, oh, just like a Chenin Blanc. They come in and say, do you have a Riesling? I say, try this. I go, oh, just like a Riesling. It's just a light white wine, and it's very pleasant. It's very nice, and it compares to a lot of those other white wines. I'm happy with the Plantation wine. I think it's a very nice wine, but Pierre's disease. There is some serious papers written about Pierre's disease on all sorts of places. You can go and you can look in the universities, southern universities all over, anywhere from California, Texas, University of Florida, UF, and all these places have papers and all sorts of stuff about Pierce disease. And basically, you know, they all say about the same thing. You know, we can do this, we can do that, but we can't stop it. And this is the problem. They've broken it down. They found areas that Pierce disease is how it can affect stuff and how it can be possibly controlled, but not yet, you know. And so let's see, I was looking at something else. And, oh, okay, this is the one. Let's see, this is maybe too long. Yeah, 6 pages. I'm not going to go through all this. But this article here was looking at Pierce disease and actually introducing it around other crops, including American hybrid crops like Black Spanish and Blanc de Bois and Cynthiana or Norton, and done extensive evaluation on those. And one variety, the Cynthiana, which is the Vitis acidulis or the Norton grape, has been reported to be tolerant and has been planted in some parts of Texas, California, Florida, shows that it is not as resistant as you might expect, but the vines are growing in greenhouses where they've been inoculated, only to find that the bacterium would grow and thrive throughout the entire vine, but not kill it. And they don't know why. And this is something that we're finding out, too, here in Florida, a winery not too far from me, a Strong Tower winery. In fact, I think he was a guest, wasn't he? Yes. You know, I got a blank. What's his name? Oh, my engineer kind of thing. I asked her and she...
Wasn't?
No. Janice is his wife's name. I can't think of his name now. Oh, geez, that's terrible. But Strong Tower Winery, I've talked to him quite a bit. He's got Norton grapes planted. Cynthiana, if you will, it's the same grape. Anything outside of Arkansas, it's called Norton. But he's got Norton grapes planted. And he has them tested often. He's sent them up to UF. And has them tested to see if they got Pierce disease in them, because you know you don't want it to be. And it does. They've always been tested. Every time he's had them tested, they've always been tested positive for Pierce disease. But they continue to thrive. They continue to grow. They continue to produce grapes, and never has a problem with them. So, UF has been studying his vineyard, trying to understand why it has been tested positive for Pierce disease, and yet it's not killing the grapevines. So, this is one of the other mysteries of Pierce disease. In this study in Texas, they found that it did grow and thrive in the vine, but the difference was that Cynthiana grapes or Norton grapes showed no signs of infection. The following year, though, in Texas, the vines did decline in vigor. And they started to see that Pierce disease was affecting the vines, and it reduced yield, and it started to show signs of classic PD symptoms. And the results that the growers need to be aware that such varieties could indeed produce while enduring high levels of infection in the vineyard. But, oh, geez, I can't think of his name. That's going to drive me crazy now. He's not had a decline in quality. He's not had a decline in production. He's not had a decline in what the grapes themselves and all that. So I don't know. It's there are certain grapes besides the Rotundifolia that is resistant, and obviously Cynthiana or Vitis acetabilis, which may be more in the acetabilis family, could be resistant to it. We don't know. It's something that they have been testing, I know, at UF, and trying to find out what's causing this. So, and you know, the regional things too could have a thing. They're talking about this in Texas here about how this is done here, but regional climates and stuff like that might affect it. I don't have an answer to that either. So, and let's see. So, let me go into something else here that I want to talk about. Texas has been doing some rootstock evaluations, seeing if that can't help with the Pierce disease problem, and they're having no luck with that either. There's some other things here. Napa and Sonoma are starting to see a surge in Pierce disease. Now, this two of California's prominent wine regions, and like I told you on the map, the almost all of California, and one of the things that the map shows is that Sonoma and Napa are right smack dab in the middle of Pierce disease having a problem. But Pierce disease strains comes in multiple strains in plants, including grapevines and fruits. And this article is reading here. Obviously, they have to tell you background because we just talked about the strain behind Pierce disease, which forms a gel in the vines, choking the plants, originated in southern U.S. and the illness has spread rapidly through California vineyards in 1996. They blamed the glass-eating sharpshooter on this, not a non-local insect. They have labored to keep various sharpshooters away from the vines. And the most recent one that's spreading it is the blue-green sharpshooter. Now, there you go. Now, this is something I saw mentioned a couple of times, and like the article I just said, the blue-green sharpshooter is starting to carry the Pierce disease that affects grapevines, and it's starting to come in. If we start getting more bugs that do this, it's going to start becoming more and more critical. The worst problem in the area is with the warmest winters. Russian River is one of them. The small creeks that feed into rivers, such as Dry Creek. Napa, growers in Napa are seeing similar patchwork patterns of vineyards that are affected. Monica Cooper, who is Napa Valley's UCCE viticulture advisor, said that there's marked increase in the incidence of Pierce disease, especially in those blocks that normally have it. There are many areas, particularly along the riverbeds, where they've done habitat restoration. And previously they've had little problems with it, but the habitat restoration, non-native plants along the riverbeds have acted as reservoirs for the azalea, allowing it to remain in the region even after infected vines were destroyed. And so this has been a problem in California, and something that I want to address just a little bit more here too, in the fact that it affects the glass-winged sharpshooter, and now we can even say the blue-green sharpshooter affects so many different plants that when you start putting introduced plants into an area, you start putting it around areas where it can protect it, then destroying your grapevines, you're destroying the problems there is not going to solve the problem overall, because you'll replant and you'll have the problem again. The vineyards that we planted at the winery were hybrids, University of Florida hybrids, and said to be immune to Pierce disease. A small vineyard was planted way back when we first opened, and those didn't last. It wasn't taken care of and all that, and you have to take care of young grapevines, and they weren't taken care of. They were planted actually before I started there, and they weren't taken care of. Then when we planted the 10 acres, I was warding them, taking care of them and all that. There's our University of Florida hybrids that were resistant to Pierce disease, but that didn't stop the few grapevines that we had around the winery being infected. And there was no other plants around. There's no other grapevines around. The closest grapevine that the Glasswing Sharpshooter could have been around was, I don't know, miles and miles and miles away. So to have these grapevines die from Pierce disease is baffling, because there was nothing that could really cause it to be spread to these plants. So this is the problem with Pierce disease. I mention Pierce disease to people as they come in there, and nobody's heard of it before, but I say, you know, you need to be aware of this, because it's going to start affecting this country. Other areas in California have seen no increase in the incidence of Pierce disease this year, but they blame part of that to the drought conditions, the lush river systems and all that in Sonoma and Napa have served as reservoirs, but with the drought, the little small streams and a lot of different things that were areas where plants were, where the Pierce disease could survive, did not. Temecula used to be a major hotbed for Pierce disease. It's also experienced no change in levels this year. Scientists and growers are still somewhat puzzled about the complicated set of factors that contribute to these outbursts. And so they're looking at it closely. California Department of Agriculture's Pierce GWSS board, and they do have one, as does Florida, as does Texas, and I'm sure a lot of other states, have just funded a three-year study to find out the causes of Pierce's outbreak. And This article was posted January 8, 2016, so this is a new article, a new thing. Dr. Rodrigo Almeida, an entomologist and Pierce expert at UC Berkeley, is heading up this program for the next 3 years. So maybe we can find some stuff there. Dated January the 12th, 2016, a newly identified enzyme, they're saying, may be the culprit in Pierce disease damage on grapevines. UC Davis have identified an enzyme that appears to play a key role in the insect-permitted Pierce disease. They estimate that it caused California grape industry and wine industries in California alone more than $100 million a year. And that's just California. Start looking at all the other states on that. Researchers hope the discovery will lead to a new diagnosis and potential treatments. Their findings are contrary to previous studies that saying that it is actually an enzyme. The bacterial disease, they're saying, much like cancer, if you understand how the virulent form spreads, you can better control or remove it. They anticipate that this discovery is going to open new ways to think about dealing with Pierce disease and looking at the immune response that they haven't considered yet as a possibility. The infection progresses. It has been known for years that when Axillea fastidiosa invades a grapevine, it produces a biofilm or gel in the xylem, the vascular tissue that transports water and some nutrients throughout the vine. Scientists have theorized that this biofilm damages the vine by clogging up the xylem, preventing the flow of water to the leaves. The theory seemed to explain the yellowing of leaf edges and eventual death of the leaf tissue. But not all of the evidence stacked up to fit that theory. For example, a heavy accumulation of Xylella fastidiosa in grapevine leaves was not always accompanied by severe disease systems in leaves. Hence why I was just telling you on Cynthia or Norton, not too far from us, such secreted proteins are known to play key roles in triggering many plant diseases. So the resulting data indicated that an enzyme, which the researchers named LESA, L-E-S-A, was quite abundant during the XF infections and shared characteristics with similar enzymes known to be capable of breaking down plant cell walls. So the researchers went on to confirm their suspicions by demonstrating that a mutant strain of Axillea fastidiosa bacteria with a specific gene knocked out or inactivated lacked the ability to cause infection in grapevines. Gene therapy. The LESA enzyme has the ability to move through cell members, equipping the Axillea fastidiosa bacteria to invade the grapevine and to live in the xylem tissue, where it feeds on fat-like compounds called lipids. In this way, the LESA enzyme triggers the process that causes the typical Pierce disease leaf damage, a process completely unrelated to the xylem blockage and water stress that had previously been thought to cause the symptomatic leaf damage. So there you go. Maybe that is the basis of the inoculation. Maybe that is the basis of the cure there, finding turning off the one enzyme that is causing the blockage and letting it survive in there. And maybe that's what's happening with Cynthiana or Norton grapes in areas that it's being turned off by the plant itself. I don't know. You know, it's these things work in odd and strange ways. So, but that's the Pierce disease is usually controlled by spray applications. And that article was from January 12th. This one here, Enzyme Discovery Sheds Light on Pierce Disease. Dated January 22nd. Another one dated February the 12th. All are talking about the enzyme being choked, and ultimately treatments have been aimed at killing the bacteria, even using viruses that attack the Axillea. But their new research suggests that the enzyme produced by the Axillea may be responsible for the characteristic vine damage and death. So to test the theory, they have knocking out the gene that produces the LESA enzyme, L-E-S, capital A, enzyme. The result, vines infected with the altered form of Axillea showed little or no signs of the disease or its damaging result, resulting damage. So they've hypothesized that the enzyme is the one that's causing the breakdown of cell walls and the blockage and all that. And if they can remove that or if they can turn that off, then they will have a good way to stop P. Pierce disease from damaging the grapevines, and I'm sure a lot of other plants and all that. Currently, the only way that Pierce disease is controlled is by spray application, which actually targets insects that transmit the disease. They're actually doing nothing about the bacteria. And understanding how the bacteria works is a new tool that could work wonders for it. Now, you can't go into each plant and turn off that enzyme. So this is might be what the inoculation that Texas A&M was talking about. So that is where we stand now. And these are new articles. These are only about 2 or 3 months old. And it's an ongoing thing, ongoing problem. And maybe things like turning off this enzyme, this less A enzyme that is part of the xylem, is enough to stop the Pierce disease and to find a cure for it, or something close to a cure. As things are going now, they really going to have to do something, because it is getting worse. And as we warm up, and we are warming up, whether y'all want to agree or disagree with the reasons, the world is warming up, and it is causing this bug to actually move further and further north. And so not only is it affecting the areas that it's affecting now, but it's also going to start affecting areas like, more and more Virginia, maybe up in the warm areas, if it can overwinter in Pennsylvania and stuff like that. A little timeline, I'll give you this before I end tonight. The timeline of the Azalea disease events. 1880s, Southern California, Pierce disease. It was named Anaheim vine disease. The 30s and 40s, Central Valley PD outbreaks. The alfalfa acting as a reservoir in California in the 30s and 40s, and it fed it. Late 80s, Azalea diseases appeared in South America, citrus trees and coffee trees. And about 1990, GWSS arrived in California, the glass-winged sharpshooter, so it worked its way over there by 1990. Late 1990, PD outbreak in Temecula, first outbreak linked to the GWSS. Again, late 1990s, new diseases in ornamentals, which oleander and sweet gum were affected by Pierce disease. Around 2000, PD outbreak in Kern County. Also 2000, GWSS area-wide programs begin in California. 2012, PD in General Beale. Failure of chemical control, they're thinking. Maybe they don't know. And in 2013, olive leaf scorch in Italy. Azalea is the casual agent of that. So it is expanding. It is going around some areas, hundreds of sharpshooters on vines 15 years ago, and they're trying to control that. And not just the glass-winged sharpshooter, but the blue-green sharpshooter. Some of these are ongoing things. So maybe... Yeah. Gene therapy might be the thing, but I don't see how that's going to do. But they do plant rootstock for everything, so maybe gene therapy might be the key to ending it. As we find out stuff, as I discover stuff, as I read stuff, I will be the first to pass it on to you. And one other thing, too. I got some people that joined this week that liked the program. Thank you. Hope you enjoy it, and some other people, new people, have been listening to it. I got an email from a gentleman that was listening to the phone program last week. He sent me a link to a very knowledgeable person at a local school here. I emailed him. I haven't called him yet. I emailed him, told him, I'll try to get a hold of him. He gave me a courtesy return email, so maybe we can get him on the program in the future. Again, thank you for the email and the contact for that, too. So,
very good.
Yeah, people are listening. Yay. Maybe awesome. Three or four of them, but people are listening. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the live show, but there's definitely, still a good following on the archive show. So,
yep.
You may be listening to it late at night or early in the day on a weekend or whatever. But,
jogging or driving to work or any number of things. Yeah, but you're right. The live show, not a whole lot of listeners, but the archives do jump the numbers
definitely.
Way up there. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Very good. Glad to have you all with us, and thanks for tuning in again. There's I don't see any events.
Nope.
Is it this weekend? Okay.
Nothing this weekend. This is one of those rare things where we have two full weekends before a festival, mm-hmm. which,
there's something coming up. I think your engineer posted something on Facebook.
Yeah,
I think it's over there in Newport Richey Wine.
27th. You're right.
Yeah. 20.
That is.
Not the good information.
That is called Spring in the Park. It's wine and craft beer.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And it's Wednesday evening, April 27th, 6 to 9 p.m. at Sims Park, which is located on Main Street, downtown Newport Richey. Right next to the river. Beautiful location. Absolutely beautiful location. It's $25 for tickets, but it gets you to walk around and taste a whole bunch of wines, a whole bunch of beers, a whole bunch of food, a whole bunch of everything. It's 3 hours. We're all out there showing our products and letting people know what we've got. Sponsors, Rotary Club of Trinity, the Jose Cardenas, Dinya's Art of the Art of Renovation, Jose Cardenia Homes, Profile Designs, Matthew Kendall, who is an attorney, also another attorney, Maki Law, will be sponsoring this. Custom Windows and Doors of Pasco is a sponsor, as is Catherine Starkey, who is a Pasco County Commissioner. So,
what are the times? What are the times Wednesday?
Wednesday from 6 to 9. And it's $25 for tickets.
Okay.
But you can sit down there for $25. You'll get your fill of food, wine, and beer. And there's going to be some great craft beers there. I'm going to be bringing some wine. I'm not going to bring all of them. It's just too much to have. You can purchase, too. This is what we were told. It can be purchased. So it should be a fun thing. We just hope this weather holds out. And we're having ourselves some gorgeous weather here. We hope the weather holds out. And if the weather holds out, it's going to be just a wonderful night. So,
awesome.
Local breweries and restaurants, sip, taste, and mingle along the Cody River is wine and craft beer evening. So,
sounds great.
Yes.
Sounds great. Good time. Yeah. Middle of the week, Wednesday the 27th.
Wednesday, 27th. The first annual is what they were saying, too. So when you start saying first annual, there's always that possibility that there will be a second and third and fourth annuals. So,
that'll be a good turnout. Good turnout. We'll kind of promote that for next time. So, sounds good. And we hope to hear about it on the 28th show.
I will definitely tell you how that went on the 28th show. And
all right. Sounds good. Mark your calendars and be there in Newport Richey, Sims Park. It is 8:03. We'll go ahead and close the show down for this week. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. And like I said, we'll see you all on April 28th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You all have a great week. Go drink wine. And, it's good for you. Another interesting show next week. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you all for tuning in tonight.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery.
Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.